From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, February 24th, 2025. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey, there he is, Self. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Ask anybody, they'll tell you. Since it is Monday, let's do the Monday march back to work and get it over with. What do you say? Shoulders back, stiff backbone, smile on your face, and a prayer on your lips, and everything is going to be just fine. All right, let's get things officially launched with
the Daily Datagram.
Oh, yeah. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says, a good marriage is like a casserole. Only those involved actually know what goes into it. Good analogy. I like that. And it better be so good that there are no leftovers.
Where's the Tylenol?
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happened on this day throughout history.
Oh, boy.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Nice.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Okay.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, you just go ahead and bring that big old quiz on. We'll see what happens. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1917 during World War I. The U.S. ambassador to the U.K., Walter Hines Page, was given the Zimmermann Telegram, in which, listen to this, Germany pledged to ensure the return of New Mexico, Texas, and Arizona to Mexico if Mexico would just declare war on the United States. Well, I guess you got to hand it to them for their ambition, huh? Yeah. And it was on this day in 2008, Fidel Castro retired as the president of Cuba and the Council of Ministers after 32 years. He remained as head of the Communist Party for another 3 years. Meanwhile, he handed down the day-to-day operation of the Cuban government to his little brother, Raul. Which reminds me, if anything should ever happen to me, I want to hand down this blogcast to my little brother, Dexter.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Perhaps the single most divisive, hateful, and racist figure in media these days, Joy Reid, is going to be out at MSNBC the end of this week. Thank goodness. Good riddance. Now, she appears at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the network, and she's long been known for not just sharp criticism of Trump, just outright hateful speech. And how they justify it, I don't know. But this is all part of a shakeup at the network. And the show is going to be replaced by a new panel show featuring co-hosts Alicia Menendez, Michael Steele, and Simone Sanders Townsend. Now, the final episode of The Readout is set to air probably Friday, marking the end of its 5-year run. Gee, it's only been 5 years. Feels like an eternity. Additionally, Alex Wagner, who's hosted the 9 p.m. weeknight slot, except for Monday nights, led by Rachel Madcow, is expected to be named a contributor, according to three sources familiar with ongoing discussions. And Wagner has been reporting from across the U.S. during the first 100 days of Trump's new presidency, while Maddow anchors the 9 p.m. hours, unlikely to return to her weeknight hosting role, according to the sources who were speaking with Variety. So the changes really represent change. That's it. Not an idealistic change, not an editorial change in thinking. They're going to continue to be unabashedly extreme left wing. But at least it's change. Our incredibly talented White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said Saturday, the president is confident in his ability to strike a deal with Russia and to end the conflict in Ukraine, even going so far as to suggest an end to the 3-year-long war could come as early as this week. All right, quoting her, She had just gotten back from CPAC. She was crossing the, I guess, the front yard of the, or the backyard of the White House. And she encountered a bunch of press. And she said, quote, "The president, his team are very much focused on continuing negotiations with both sides of this war to end the conflict. And the president is very confident we can get it done this week." You know, is this really anchored in reality? And then as I asked that question, which of course was rhetorical, we have become so numb to this thing. We're just assuming that this war is going to go like the Vietnam War did and the Afghan War did. I mean, Vietnam went for what? Not quite 15 years. Basically from 1961 to 1975. And that was long. That was a long war. That was a record that we set with that one. And then came the Afghan War. And we were there for 20 years. So we become so numb to this phenomenon. We get involved in an area of the globe as a police action. And then it becomes a war. But it's a protracted war. And we're there forever. And we just kind of accept that. And we can't. We can't accept this anymore. And Donald Trump's doing a good job of pointing that out. So Leavitt mentioned that NSA advisor Matt Waltz would be working around the clock on a deal and shared that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has been involved in discussions surrounding a proposed deal with the Ukrainians to harness raw minerals. You know, the Ukrainians, they owe that much to us. And I don't think the Ukrainian people mind that at all. But this guy, Zelensky, who I liked at first, I've taken a big disliking to this little dictator in recent weeks. When it was first suggested to him that they would exchange rare minerals for our help and all this money that we've given them so far in this war, in terms of billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars, just given from you and me, the taxpayer, to Ukraine to fight Putin, right? And when it was first suggested that they should exchange their rare minerals to pay us back, Zelensky scoffed. The chutzpah of this guy. So she said that when it comes to the critical minerals, this is an important piece for the president. It's very important for the president because it'll recoup American tax dollars. And it'll also be a great economic partnership between the United States of America and for the Ukrainian people as well as they rebuild their country following this brutal war. Here are some numbers. Secretary of State Rubio proclaimed the venture would yield $200 million in funds and add a vested security interest in Ukraine pending legislative approval. Well, $200 million, that's not a lot of money. I mean, it would be a lot of money for me. It would be a lot of money for you. But in the overall picture of things, it's not a lot of money, especially when you consider that we have so far provided $65.9 billion, just under $66 billion in military assistance to Ukraine since the start of the war. I think that Mr. Zelensky needs to climb down off of his high horse. I'm just not a fan of regime changes. And we have a long history of that in this country, forcing regime changes in other countries. But the fact that Zelensky has halted elections, and he didn't do it in a dictatorial manner. It was done according to the Ukrainian constitution. But this guy Zelensky apparently is profiting from this war because he seems to resist all attempts to stop it. Some very interesting things are going on with our military, not the least of which is retired Lieutenant General Dan Kane is up for becoming the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And it highlights a long-standing fascination that Trump has held for this particular individual. Now, maybe if I use his nickname, you might remember having heard his name, during the first Trump administration. Raisin. He's known as Dan Raisin Kane. And this is the guy who, back during Trump's first term, managed to liquidate ISIS in a matter of weeks. When everybody else said, oh, it'll be years. You can't get rid of them. It'll take you years. Well, their connection actually traces back to a 2018 meeting in Iraq. And this is a moment that seemingly left a permanent impression on the president. Because during a 2019 speech at the Conservative Political Action Conference, you know, CPAC, Trump recounted his first encounter with General Kane, then serving as the deputy commander of a special operations task force against ISIS. And Kane reportedly told the president that the militant group could be eradicated within a week. Rather bold assertion, but it resonated with Trump. And since then, he's retold the story about how he met Raisin Kane multiple times. Now, Kane, oh man, what a resume this guy's got. He's a retired F-16 pilot. Could be promoted to four-star general if he gets this. And of course, he's got to go through the usual confirmation process, because that's one of the military's top jobs, you know. He's going to be a big guy. He already is. After I read his resume, man, this guy's something else. Anyhow, earlier this year, Kane described on a podcast how, as a young man, he wanted to follow in the footsteps of his father, a fighter pilot. He graduated in 1990 from the Virginia Military Institute, known as VMI, with a bachelor's degree in arts and economics. Wow. Aren't those pretty much diametrically opposed? But, hey, maybe he's just a very broad-minded individual. Anyhow, he flew more than 2,800 hours in the F-16, was one of the pilots tasked with protecting Washington on 9/11 when Al-Qaeda did what they did. And so, yeah, he's had some pretty choice assignments and some dangerous ones. And according to his official Air Force biography, Kane was a part-time member of the National Guard and a serial entrepreneur and investor. From 2009 to 2016, he was most recently the Associate Director for Military Affairs at the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, before his retirement late last year. He didn't stay retired for too long. You know, Chief, if I had a resume like his and I were retired, I think I'd want to stay retired, wouldn't you? And then again, maybe not. I mean, geez. At my age, I'm still working. It's because I tried retirement and I hated it. Hated it. So anyhow, it was his time in Iraq from 2018 to 2019 that helped him gain Trump's attention. Kane's name coming into the spotlight comes as Trump has purged top military figures already in the Pentagon, including firing America's most senior commander. C.Q. Brown, you familiar with him? He's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Air Force General, also again Air Force. But this guy Brown is really big into that DEI crap. And up until the time he was canned, he was America's highest ranking general and only the second black general to serve as chairman. But he was fired with immediate effect. Now, the president's also going to replace the head of the U.S. Navy, which is a position held by Admiral Lisa Franchetti, the first woman to lead a military service. And he's also removing the Judge Advocates General for the Army, Navy, and Air Force. Pretty critical positions that ensure enforcement of military justice. And I'm sure they're also going to enforce the removal of DEI from our military. But anyhow, it's going to be very interesting to see how this all shakes out. Donald Trump making some very interesting and very decisive moves where the Pentagon is concerned. And I think in the short term, it's going to prove a great improvement for our national security. Hopefully, it'll do the same in the long term. Does the name Lindy Lee strike a familiar note? Even if you're just a part-time news junkie, you have probably seen her popping up on any one of a number of conservative landscape outlets. She's been with Glenn Beck. You can see her interview with him on YouTube. I think it aired on Blaze TV, but you have to subscribe for that. She's been on Fox News a couple of times already, and I've seen her on, whose podcast was that I saw recently? Well, that escapes me. Anyhow, that's not the important part. The important part is that there's one voice in the conservative media landscape, a name you're probably familiar with, Sean Spicer. He was Donald Trump's first press secretary during Trump 45? Let's call it Trump 45. Okay, this first term. And Sean Spicer, not one of the most gifted when it comes to communication, but he ain't bad. But the thing that I like about him is he calls things as he sees them. And he's calling out Lindy Lee because he doesn't trust her. Now, I'm going to let Sean take things over. I found this on YouTube. This is from his, his podcast. But I want you to listen to this.
Have you heard of a woman named Lindy Lee? If not, let me tell you a little of who she is. Lindy is the new it girl in many conservative circles. Look, let me back up a second. Elections are about growing the vote. They're a game of addition, not subtraction. I'm all for disillusioned Democrats and lefties coming over to join us in the MAGA movement on the right, voting Republican, voting for Donald Trump. I mean, the water's warm. Jump on in. We need you. We want you. OK, just to be clear on that, we've seen some great converts over the recent years. Brandon Straka from Walk Away comes over. Nicole Shanahan, RFK's running mate. Heck, RFK, he ran as a Democrat. He's now in Donald Trump's cabinet. So is former Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. She's now the director of national intelligence. And even friend of the show, Dave Rubin, wrote a whole book. I highly recommend it, about his conversion, his journey from the left to the right. I mean, we've even got some people faking it, if you know what I mean. I'm talking about the tech bros. You, Mark Zuckerberg. You, Jeff Bezos. I mean, I don't actually think that they are on our side, but they're at least faking it pretty good. Which brings me to this woman, Lindy Lee. She is a woman who has unsuccessfully run for office as a Democrat multiple times. And she, up until a few months ago, described herself as a hardcore progressive. Prior to the election, very close to the election, she posted on X that Trump raped E. Jean Carroll. He terrorized the Capitol. It wasn't just a riot. Her words. Trump committed treason with Russian collusion. He whitewashed the crimes of a racist thug. I mean, that was her. Okay? These are the things she said. Here's what she said 32 days from the election. What are you doing to elect beloved Kamala? Okay? This is right before the election. Well, guess what? The election happened. She lost. Her candidate lost. And now she is having a big, huge conversion over to our side. And many folks on the right are helping her. She's making the rounds on conservative, right-leaning MAGA podcasts. In fact, she went on Sean Ryan's show as her coming out from her Democratic closet. Now, again, I love Sean Ryan. He's got some great guests and a great show. But let's just be honest about it. She's really not a conservative. She has no reason to justify this conversion, unlike many of the other people. So what changed? What claims that she has that make her now on our side? She suddenly is leaking all this information about how badly Biden's cognitive ability was, how he depleted, and she's now having all these confessions about the campaign and how he was as a candidate.
ABC News, all of these outfits I would work with, everyone thought that Biden was unfit. I don't know a single person who thinks that Biden was fit to run.
She claimed a group of millennial Gen Z staffers were running the show, and that's why it was taken so far to the progressive left.
As a general overview, these are the people who made a living off of their connection with Biden. It's like they were leeching off the Biden name for decades, and all of them realized that they would never work for another president, so they had to ride the gravy train all the way through, you know, and ride it to the very end.
I mean, I get it. Biden and Harris were both horrible candidates. I would run from them, too, if I were her. But she's making the round in conservative spaces, and she says that she's bringing her donors with her.
So excited because I just got an unsolicited text from one of my biggest donors who gave $1 million last time. He's like, I'm going to continue giving to you. And he attended the inauguration. He's one of the donors that, you know, I got to give. So a lot of my donors are business oriented. They just want America to prosper. And President Trump wants America to prosper. And he's very business friendly. So these people are not, you know, social justice warriors. They are not like gender crazy lunatics. They just want America to succeed, for us to have strong borders, close, you know, to have sensible immigration policies.
I mean, that's a pretty compelling case. But here's the thing. As much as I welcome people over to our side, and that, as I said, politics is a game of addition, not subtraction, I don't trust her. I don't believe her. I think that she is just using us. I get not liking the candidates, right? That's obvious, Biden and Harris. But what changed ideologically in you that makes you now a self-described conservative? Did you have some kind of big epiphany about life or taxes or government spending? If so, explain that. Or this really isn't a conversion. It's more of an opportunity to take advantage of the current political environment, isn't it? Let's face it. If you hadn't had this conversion, you'd be on an island by yourself. Democrats right now control nothing in Washington. I get it. Here's the bottom line. She's a grifter, and everyone on the right needs to stop helping her. She raised millions and millions of dollars for Kamala, which means that she believed in Kamala. Kamala's campaign was telling her that they could win 3 to 4 battleground states, and the campaign knew along that that wasn't going to happen. But she perpetuated those lies. You can't say that you supported Kamala all the way until she crashes and burns and then say, I'm now a Trump supporter. She said this the other day, literally, surprise, I go to church, I have traditional values, I have been a conservative the whole time.
I grew up as a Christian conservative. I went to church every Sunday. I went to youth group every Friday. Even today, I read the Bible every night in my battered King James version of a Bible with a calendar in the back.
Well, that's just simply not true. Guess what? I've got a surprise. Had Kamala won, Lindy Lee is not going to have her big conservative coming out party. She is a grifter, and we need to treat her as that. But you know what? I'm a good guy. So here's my proposition for you. Lindy, if you want to come on the show and explain yourself, explain why you're conservative. The invitation's open. Come on the show. Tell me that you're a real conservative and why, and I'll give you the airtime to do it.
Interesting theory on his part, and I have been suspect of her for the same reason. Do you believe in body language? I watched her body language when she was talking with Glenn Beck, and I just wasn't buying it, at least not hook, line, and sinker. Now, there's a good way that we could handle this, too, as conservatives. And that is just embrace her. Say, hey, congratulations for figuring things out. Congratulations for discovering which side is right. They don't call us the right for nothing, you know. And just invite her to stay with us. Invite her to really contribute. Obviously, she's a contributor in that she's been able to go out and beat the bushes and bring in the money. She did it for several years for the Democrats. Let her do it for us. So, you know, go ahead. Be suspicious of her if you like, just like Sean Spicer is, and I am too. Convince me. I mean, just pretend. Pretend for a moment that you're from Missouri. Show me. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum was talking back on Thursday, talking with the media, and she said that she's going to propose constitutional reforms aimed at protecting Mexico's sovereignty over concerns that the U.S. military could cross the border to pursue Mexican drug cartels. Now, she made the remarks after the Trump administration designated 6 Mexican drug cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. So apparently this is stoking fears down south of the border that Trump may be setting up the possibility for U.S. military action inside Mexico. Ask me I would give them approval. But Sheinbaum said, the Mexican people will not accept under any circumstances interventions, interference, or any other act from abroad that could be harmful to the integrity, independence, and sovereignty of the nation. Well then, Ms. Sheinbaum, why don't you get off your duff and do away with the cartels? Well, there's a reason she can't do it. It's because the Mexican government is being run by the cartels. Now, these cartels on the Trump administration's list include the Sinaloa, Jalisco, the Zetas, the Gulf Cartels, Cartel Unidos, and La Nueva Familia Michoacana. Other groups include, and this is beyond those initial six, they include the international TDA, you know, Trendy Aragua, and the Salvadoran gang, Mara Salvatrucha, or Salvatrucha. That's actually MS-13, okay? So are they on the case? Well, it looks like Trump's administration seems to be serious, so much so that Claudia Sheinbaum wants to revise their constitution there in Mexico, just kind of reiterating to the rest of the world that Mexico is a sovereign nation. Well, nobody's disputed that. But come on, the track record shows that Mexico hasn't done doodly squat to stop the flow of drugs, particularly the fentanyl, which is so deadly, into the United States. And you see, this is all part of President Trump's America First policies. To the Comedy Corner and Steve Geyer.
You know, she never shuts her brain off, man. She's always like buzzing. She has a hard time falling asleep, you know, but she's always buzzing. And if I, you know, I ask her something, it's like I get this a myriad of answers. And then, you know, me, it's like I can actually kind of shut my brain down, you know. And so there's times when Kathy and I will be like, you know, in the car driving, like, you know, we're going somewhere, you know, out to eat or maybe driving to a show. And, you know, and I'm just kind of shut down. I'm just kind of, you know, doing the drive. And all of a sudden something hits her and she just turns and goes, honey, what are you thinking? And how many of you guys know the answer? Shout it out to me. What are you thinking?
Nothing.
You think we're lying. I swear we're not lying. We can actually think of nothing. It's God's gift. It's called testosterone poisoning. Did you know that the chemical wash of testosterone actually kills some brain cells? It's true. And I was like, what do you think? I'm like, oh God, you scared me. I forgot you were in the car. Oh my gosh. Wave your hand or something. Golly. Oh. But we've been married for October the 14th will be our 31st wedding anniversary, and it's really kind of fun. Yeah, and thank you. She's right up there. She's right there. I like that we're different. You know, in our culture now, I don't know what's going on, but everybody's trying to homogenize us into thinking the same way and being the same way and having the same thought. And that's boring. Look, I know that there's conflict when we disagree, but it's also kind of fun, man. You know, because you want some difference in your life, you know? And the fact that we are different is wonderful. And I think that the biggest thing when it comes to marriage, I think the biggest defining point is when it comes to being intimate. Like men, we have a thing for intimate, which is chicka chicka bow wow, right? And women, it's conversation. Let's talk. And then what? Right? And so I do a lot of premarital counseling. I started working with couples and everything, and they would come in stupid, absolutely stupid, because they were in love. And they would say things like, oh, Steve, we're so in love. We have everything in common. We're just alike. We like the same things. We finish each other's sentences. We're just alike. Well, then one of you is unnecessary.
Get out there and make it a terrific week. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.